and welcome to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. On this week's episode, the guys talk about the massive Compass and Anywhere Real Estate merger and what it can mean for buyers, sellers, and agents in the United States. Our off-market, private exclusive listings and the growing push for digital real estate transactions a good thing for the normal consumer? The guys discuss all of this while drinking and reviewing Colonel E.H. Taylor Small Batch Bottle and Bond Bourbon. What is up, everybody? Welcome back to another episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks, powered by Living in Colorado, the Mile High Perspective on YouTube, Lifestyle International Realty, Keller Williams Downtown, and
E-Mortgage Capital.
And for EMC. A short time, Baboni.
Baboni.
Yes. And guys, welcome back to the episode. As you guys know, we talk about real estate topics while drinking and reviewing bourbon and whiskeys. And Jameson had a closing this morning that he figured he'd spoil us a little bit.
Celebrate, man. You know what I'm saying? Sometimes, as you guys know, and we'll take this, right? What was the stat? So,
wait a minute.
Hold up.
How you get it like that?
First 7 months of 2025, over 800,000 licensed realtors in the nation.
8,000?
800,000.
Oh, 800,000.
Had one or less transactions.
Oh, man.
So we know that it is not easy out there.
No.
If you're an agent listening to this. We know, right? And my whole thing is when you do have a closing, you should celebrate yourself.
You should celebrate.
You know what I'm saying?
You know, and it gets, when you're struggling a little bit with your goals and whatnot, and you're used to a certain level or whatever, or even when you're closing a lot, you take it for granted.
Yeah.
And you should celebrate.
You should celebrate.
You're helping someone out. You celebrate.
And this was
I'm horrible at that. I need
my
to
little
that.
Version of celebrating. I went to the liquor store, and it's a liquor store I always go to.
It's
No, it's Seven Star, which is down by
off
us.
Of Plum Creek.
It's attached to a Papa John's
mm-hmm.
and a farm, a state
like a,
farm,
like, a strip mall that should have been demolished.
Yeah, but for whatever reason, they're the only liquor store in Castle Rock that I've found that consistently stocks things like this. E.H. Taylor.
Not only things like that, but good price actually.
And good prices, mm-hmm. yeah. And I'll tell you guys the price on this once we actually review it. But I saw it, and I was like, oh, well, you know what? I came from the closing. I want to go get something. I saw this on the shelf, and I go, you know what? I had a win today, might as well celebrate it. So,
hey.
So what I brought for you guys.
I'm glad I'm here to celebrate the win for you.
And I got to celebrate with my boys
because
we win together, right? And for my clients, too. It was a huge win for my clients. We can go into that in a tad. But what I brought for you guys was Colonel E.H. Taylor, which is in the same breath as Buffalo Trace and Eagle Rare and Blanton's and all those good things. But it is one of my top five, one of Oscar's top five, fantastic bourbon. It is a bottle and bond, which we know it has to be 100 proof. And we know it's got to be, it is held to certain federal regulations as far as how it is stored in rickhouses and what it is proofed at. I'm excited to try it.
I'm gonna go ahead.
Good Friday bourbon.
I know everybody has their choice words for Blanton's and whatnot, but this right here, across the board, 100% way better than Blanton's.
I don't know if I would never not order this
if
I'm out at like a nice establishment.
Mm-hmm.
You know,
like if unless they're like, oh, it's gonna be $150.
Yeah, if they're overpriced, if they're overcharging the shit out of it, no. But if it's priced right. I am also very excited to see how it performs
with these new
in these 5-star, 5,000 reviewed snifters. So,
already
yeah.
Sorry,
I'm
the
here.
Sweetness
Charlie,
I'll need.
Hand me the bottle while you. Well, I don't need that yet. I just want to do this. So, I just a little bit about this, right? So, basically, this thing started getting distilled around the Civil War.
Mm-hmm.
So that's how, hence Colonel, right? Not a lot of colonels back in the 1800s unless they were fighting each other. The techniques that he used, they still use today. What they did, because these are all, every single E.H. Taylor is a small batch.
Mm-hmm.
So they go through and they basically are, they pick barrels. They identify those with the richest and most complex flavors. A small batch of those barrels are then blended together to deliver a distinctive character that is then crafted into E.H. Taylor. So a lot of times what they do is they'll take some of the barrels that will potentially be different types of whiskey that you will get at liquor stores, but the best ones, get put into a small batch, and voila, you get E.H. Taylor.
Magic.
So. Well, I mean, in this, I feel like Blanton's, Eagle Rare, E.H. Taylor, all of them have that top shelf mysticism that mm-hmm. comes along with it. And, you know, we've done Buffalo Trace on the show. We've done Blanton's.
That distillery doesn't have a, you know, bottom shelf.
Yeah.
They don't have a bottom shelf. Mm. If you go, I think they have White Dog.
Yeah.
They mm-hmm. have, you know, but that's only at the distillery.
Exactly. Yeah. They don't really sell anything that's not up to par with their reputation.
Yeah.
So I've actually never had E.H. Taylor Small Batch.
Oh my God.
No shit.
Yep.
Yeah. Right. I'm interested to see what your review is going to be, because it's kind of skewed for us because it's, you know, it's one of our favorites.
You like it.
Mm-hmm. It's a really good bourbon. I really, truly enjoy this one.
So this is kind of fun, Charlie, since you haven't done it and you're kind of a history buff anyway.
Yeah.
So a couple of the things that E.H. Taylor put together, and remember, this is back in the 1800s, as far as the distilling process that are still in use today, not only through Buffalo Trace and their distilling process, but other distilleries. Copper fermentation tanks. So he was the first one to do that. Column stills. Modernized buildings. So basically to actually...
actual rickhouse.
Yep, an actual rickhouse. Efficient sour mash technique, and a first-of-its-kind steam heating system because it's more efficient versus fire.
Huh.
So it heats it more evenly.
Yeah.
And then he was also, and this is, I did not know this actually until about 2 seconds ago, he was a skilled politician, as most colonels were.
Interesting.
Which back in the day, I wish that was still the case.
Today. I just wish they spelled colonel the way it sounds.
Sorry, colonels. Colonels. He was a skilled politician and colonel.
That screwed me up knowing two languages, and I'm like, come on.
He pushed for the passage of the Bottled and Bond Act in 1897.
That's awesome.
And he served as the mayor of Frankfort, Kentucky for 16 years.
I'd love to go back and see what the bourbon industry thought of that. Because a lot of regulation by big companies most of the time happens so they can kind of like corner and monopolize some part of the market.
Yeah.
So I wonder if he did that specifically to like put E.H. Taylor and put it on a pedestal in comparison.
Well, that, I mean, basically I think what he realized was he went, I have a product and my product is superior. But I think he also
realized...
There's
no way to show it's superior.
Well, not only that, but he goes, at the time, remember we talked about bourbon was blinding people because there was no standard. So he goes, well, I don't want my brand to be tarnished by, you know, other things, right? Mm-hmm. I mean, the cartels do this, but on a different level. It's like, hey, we want people to continue to buy cocaine. We don't... So they go ahead and chop the heads off of people that, you know what I'm saying?
Like, or adding fentanyl to it.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. And the OFC distillery was then bought by George T. Stagg in 1879. And now that became the Buffalo Trace distillery that we know today.
What's the rules about referencing other podcasts in our podcast?
We can go for it.
Why not, right?
Yeah.
We don't have any rules. We're not regulated by the FCC.
It was, who's that one guy that, he's a comedian. He does his podcast.
Theo
has a mullet. Yeah, Theo. Mm-hmm. He's like, what's going on in this country? Man can't even do cocaine anymore safely. I was like, what?
I don't know. There's a couple of videos of Don Jr. up there rubbing some gums on the air.
Yeah. I think I like E.H. Taylor so much is because the way they do their, and if you're familiar with how they, you know, the lineage of Buffalo Trace, is it goes up in, as you go from Buffalo Trace to Blanton's to so on and so forth. But the way E.H. Taylor's made is they basically take the best barrels of Buffalo Trace and Blanton's and Eagle Rare and all these barrels, they pick the best of all of them. Mm-hmm. And then the master distillers mesh all of them together. And that's where you get E.H. Taylor. Same with George T. Stagg.
Yeah, I was going to say, and don't forget also the Buffalo Trace distillery is the same distillery that does Pappy.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
So like there's all of that.
And I have an unpopular opinion. I don't know, Oscar, if you share this, and even if you take price out of it, I will take this over Pappy 7 out of 7 days.
Yeah, I've never, and again, I'll have Pappy, but I've never had a pour of Pappy and be like, yes, thousands of dollars worth.
Yeah.
Nope. I'll take this over Pappy.
I'm excited for Charlie to try this. I didn't realize you've never had it, man.
Never had it.
It's cool.
I'm gonna pass you guys
it's
glasses.
A great bottle. I'm excited.
Sweet.
Thank you, sir. These glasses.
And I'm not even going to tell you the awards it's won because one of them is San Francisco, so it's not even worth mentioning.
We don't even count that one. Sorry, San Francisco.
It's not even worth mentioning.
We don't.
Uh-oh.
No. Uh-oh.
Jameson's getting blinded.
I'm blinded. Although it's perfect timing because look, it just lit up my
glass.
No, put that back up. You need a... Your glass is a little foggy. Jeez. Blinded
well, we don't have a dishwasher here.
Oh.
Yeah.
I'm hiring Juan next week.
I love it. Well, what are you guys getting on the nose? I'm interested to what these glasses are doing. Tell me if your experience is different with these glasses.
I'm having issues. I get early fall, late summer allergies, so I do Flonase. Mm. And I do it today, and I did some Flonase before I came down here, so it's burning the crap out of my nose.
Well,
right
no, it's burning me too. That's the 100 proof. I feel like this at 100 proof has more than some of the 120 proof.
Man,
like
this.
I mean, I'm getting ethanol, but I'm still getting that sweet caramel vanilla through the back palate. Like once it goes through the nostrils and hits you in the back of the throat.
Yeah, I'm having issues because usually when you get the nose, it kind of makes you cough. Mm-hmm. It's just burning my nostrils because of the Flonase.
Trying to like smell through, like
swirl it and smell it.
Mm-hmm. Wow. It is sweeter than I thought it was going to be on the nose, for sure.
It should be, though. It is. I mean, it's known as a sweeter bourbon.
It's almost like a fig or an apricot.
Yeah, very much apricot.
Mm-hmm. Huh. But also some citrus in there.
Mm-hmm.
Interesting. I'm excited to see.
Peaches and cream.
Even the nose is evolving on it, which is weird.
Yeah.
We don't really have one where like the nose changes. All right. Mm. Cheers, gentlemen.
I'm going to give you guys a weird one. I'm going to pull an Oscar because normally this is an Oscar thing. Hold on.
Banana
and
Laffy
I'm only
Taffy.
Saying this because my daughter brought some home the other day and maybe that's why.
Mm.
Banana Laffy Taffy.
So banana, yes, 100%. But I'm getting like a fruit roll-up type of citrus.
Interesting.
Yeah.
Yeah. Or fruit roll-up Starburst.
Yeah.
Something like...
Like
candy.
Fruit leather.
Yeah.
Or, yeah.
Oh, crap.
Fuck it. We're doing it live. Let it run.
It's fine. I'm just going to be lit up from the side. It's all good.
You're lit.
But yeah.
All right.
The nose on it is evolving more so than any other one that we've had recently, which is crazy.
Cheers.
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 Salud.
Hot damn. That's fucking crazy. Hold on.
I haven't had E.H. Taylor in a while.
Ooh. Hold on. Hold up. Wait a minute.
As like this really toasted notes to it. I don't know. It's just good. No comment. I'm not talking for the rest of the podcast.
I'm just sipping. The just the evolution of the flavor from it. The spice is real heavy at the beginning of the sip.
Take another one. And it gets sweet, though.
Yeah, well, that's what I was saying.
I was going to say, I got fruit and sweet on the first sip with a little bit of spice and tobacco on the back end. Mm.
I think the tobacco is sitting real heavy for me. It's like tobacco, spice, fruit, oak, vanilla.
Thank God it's Friday.
Yep.
It's so good, though.
Yeah.
Like, it's balanced is the best way I can describe
it. Yes. Like, this is, when I was doing mixology and I was making cocktails, one of the things that they teach you about it is you have to make a balanced cocktail. One flavor can't
overpower
the other ones. And that's, we talk about old fashions all the time where too much simple syrup or too much cherry juice, whatever's in there, will totally change the cocktail. I think this in itself is like
just
a full cocktail.
Right?
Evolution.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
All right. So let me give you some of the tasting notes that you should have. Gentle oak, light char, touch of caramel. Green apple, blackberry, citrus, oak, and tobacco.
Interesting.
The first sips lean heavily into sweeter fruit, blackberry, redberry, and a hint of vanilla. But well-balanced, soft mouthfeel, not creamy, soft.
It is. Holy shit.
Right?
Wow. Every sip has been so different.
Yeah. It's like the everlasting gobstopper.
Yeah. That's wild. Oscar over here. I'm going to cut the Oscar shot. Do you see how he's taking his sips over here? Regal. I fucking love it. He's enjoying the glass.
I love these glasses.
It's awesome. Dude, I just like, because now mine's lit.
Yeah. Illuminated.
Illumination. I love it.
Yeah, you can't. I mean.
Illuminated.
This is why this is one of my favorite.
Yep. Oh, I already see this. I might have to get up and put this thing back up because the sun's going to come down and just punch me right in the face. Mm-hmm. We'll deal with it. You guys will enjoy at home my illuminated face. But not only do we drink and review bourbon, like I said earlier, we talk about real estate. And we have, honestly, Jameson, when you brought it up to me today, when we started talking about it, I started thinking, like, isn't this exactly what got us into trouble in the last 2 years?
Yeah.
Is trying to control the market, trying to control listings. So, Jameson, what are we talking about today?
So we are going to talk about an issue. Well, not an issue. Let me rephrase that. We're going to talk about private exclusive listings. And to give you a quick background, a private exclusive listing or off-market listings have been around forever, right? It just means it's a listing on a property that is not being publicly advertised, in most cases on the MLS. And when we say MLS, for most people, that means it's not going to show up necessarily on Redfin, on Realtor.com, on Zillow, so on and so forth. And the reason
it's our database that realtors use.
Yeah, the reason it's getting brought up now is because Compass is merging with Anywhere Real Estate. And Compass is its own brokerage. Anywhere Real Estate is a conglomerate that owns multiple brokerages, Century 21, Sotheby's International Realty, Cardis, there's like five or six different ones. Mm-hmm. And they're combining. And one of the things that Compass is touting now is now they have access to the largest amount of private exclusive or off-market listings. And their argument is that is beneficial to the consumer. And it's seen as kind of a consolidation of two of the largest real estate entities in the world combining forces.
How is that benefit?
Well, I mean,
from their perspective. Yeah.
Well, and we're going to get into that, from a numbers standpoint, the merger itself, it's $1.6 billion, right? And what would happen is essentially the combined brokerage company is expected to be worth $10 billion, and it would create almost 400,000 agents under a single umbrella, which would immediately make it the largest brokerage in the world, right? It's expected to go forward. It hasn't been officially passed through. This is as of 4 days ago. But it essentially is going to create the largest real estate company on the planet. It's supposed to take place 2026. And right now,
I feel like there's a lot of mergers and acquisitions happening right now across the board.
Yeah. It's basically a consolidation, right? Mm-hmm. So what they're saying is, and everybody's doing this, they're trying to bring everything in house. Mm-hmm. And what Compass, there's reasons that Compass thinks it's going to benefit consumers. We'll get into it. But that's essentially the background of what they're trying to do. They're trying to bring in all of these different players into one single umbrella. So Century 21, Cardis, Sotheby's, Compass now are all going to be under the same banner.
You know, there was a company that came out here in Colorado, Trelora.
Yes.
And one of their big lawsuits were private listings. Because they were in a lawsuit with the MLS that they weren't going to put that if their structure wasn't going to be honored, that they would have their own private listing, their own private MLS. Sure. So that was big. I don't remember how it ended up or whatnot, but they're still a player, right? The founding agent was, I knew him. He's a great person. I still like him. He's a good dude. But I don't understand why or how it would benefit the consumer if exposures, you know, your friend when you want to do listings. I have some software that doesn't just syndicate to every our search, our database as realtors, as real estate agents, it's the MLS, but then there is IDX, information direct exchange or whatever, that pulls from our MLS and syndicates to all websites. That's how all that works, realtor.com and whatnot. So there's other softwares that just push a little bit more, like Listings Magic. And, you know, that's there's value to that. So them just hoarding them with them, I don't see how it's value to the consumer.
I just don't.
But maybe there's something I don't know. Maybe.
And see, it's funny because the more I think about it, you guys remember we did the episodes on it, the NAR lawsuit that happened. The mm-hmm. whole thing was that realtors were price fixing and they were trying to fix the prices and control the market with the listings. I feel like this is the exact thing that lawsuit was about. Like, if you have a brokerage that is now monopolizing a lot of properties and they're the only ones that can list it, does that then not make them controlling the market?
Well, and I think that's the point of contention. It's not that they're the only ones that can list it. What they're saying is
they're the only ones that could
From a list, like if I want to list my house, right, I can use
whoever. They're not going to syndicate to everyone.
Yeah, I can use whoever. And the consumer will still have a choice of, do I want to list my property publicly? Do I want to list it privately? Right? Like they'll still have that choice.
Okay.
Because if I list with an agent within this conglomerate, which by the way, updated list, here's who they control. Better Homes and Gardens Real Estate, Cardis, Century 21, Coldwell Banker, Corcoran Group, ERA Real Estate, and then Sotheby's International Realty. So massive.
It's huge. Right?
Huge.
Who does Warren Buffett own?
Berkshire Hathaway.
Berkshire.
Okay. So if they list, they are essentially saying, and this is one of the arguments that I've seen, is it's giving the consumer choice of saying, okay, because we have so many
agents
under our belt now, we can private list exclusively your property and just advocate to our database, which is going to preserve your privacy, and we can list it off market to essentially test the market without having to go through different showings and inconvenience your life as a seller, right? That's one of the things that they're touting. Okay. Now, as a seller, I understand having that choice. Doesn't mean that you can't do that if you list with anybody else, right?
Sure.
If somebody lists with Keller Williams, if somebody lists with us through Lifestyle International, and they say, hey, we don't want to be on the MLS. We don't want to show up in Zillow. There was obviously a lawsuit, that was 3 months ago, where mm-hmm. Zillow was like, hey, if you list publicly, it has to be on the Zillow website within 24 hours, whatever. You still have that option. But as a marketing person, as a salesperson, to me, it doesn't make any sense.
Yeah.
Because at the end of the day, the point is to get as many eyeballs on your property as possible. So where I think it hurts people, honestly, is less on, I mean, yes, it hurts the sellers because you're not going to get, I don't see how you would get as good of a price on your home if less people are seeing it.
Yeah.
Unless their argument is, well, we have so many agents under our belt. If I'm marketing it to 340,000 agents worldwide, somebody's going to come buy your house for the list price, if that's their argument. But from a buyer standpoint, it is indicative of going back to like the 1990s where you had to go buy those magazines mm-hmm. to go find a house and then call up the agent from the yellow pages and be like, hey, can I go look at this house? And as a buyer, if I go on Zillow or if I go on realtor.com or if I go on RE Colorado and I'm looking for a property and I'm only seeing 50% of the houses that are available, As a buyer, I am going to feel gypped, and I'm almost going to be forced to go funnel to a Compass or an Anywhere Realty to make sure I'm getting access to as many listings as possible. That's where I see your point, Charlie, that is almost coercing people to use a specific brand just to make sure they're seeing as many properties as possible.
Their business model is hindering the consumer.
Right.
See, and that...
And I think what the hard part is, because it's technically not price fixing, but you're taking away choice.
You're
right?
Hoarding information.
You're taking away choice. You're forcing somebody to go with a specific brokerage to give them access. You're withholding access.
And it's real transparency. I just looked at like what are the benefits of an off market listing.
This is so good. Hold on, take another sip. It's changed already.
Okay. Oh yeah.
It's incredible. Just keeps changing.
It's great. You don't tell me to take another step.
But it says benefits. For sellers include privacy, cost savings, control, and flexibility.
But it's part of their model. But where's because Cardis is one of the biggest corporate relocation companies.
Well, here, so let's go through that. So what were the three?
So it's privacy.
Okay.
So cost savings, control, and flexibility.
Let's go with privacy.
Yep.
I see that. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
So how is it? How do they benefit from? So
I'm selling my house. I don't want nothing private.
Says they're
just in general.
They're not publicly listed, which can appeal to sellers who prefer discretion and want to avoid publicity or nosy neighbors.
So that would make sense if you are a high net worth individual. Mm-hmm. If you are
so no sign in your yard
potentially. Fine. Or if you're potentially like, I don't know, let's say you've got a trust that you don't want public knowledge of. Let's say it's an estate sale that has to do with like a high profile death. If you've got, you know, different extenuating circumstances where you don't want people all up in your business.
Mm-hmm.
I guess that makes sense. Totally get that one. What's the second one?
The second one is cost savings.
How the fuck does that play in?
They can save money on advertising, staging, and open houses.
Cool. No. I pay for that.
Yeah. The consumer doesn't pay for that.
Well, the consumer shouldn't pay for
it. Yeah. And that's, you know, my buddy Ian that helped me with my logo, he said, when we're running through a lot of these things, he said, why is that not in your listing presentation? I said, what? That you cover all the fees. I was like, oh, I thought it was a given.
It's not. No. I just had this conversation 2 days ago. Mm-hmm. And this is the response I got. I'm sorry, you cover what?
Yeah.
And I was like, yeah, Charlie had it too. Mm-hmm. So, but here's the other thing too, right?
Wow.
So, my argument to that, so Charlie, just to recap, mm-hmm. you said mm-hmm. that the cost savings piece is if the agent, for whatever reason, has the client cover some of the advertising costs, aka photography, open houses, staging, mm-hmm. let's just say they do, right?
Yep.
But we also know that those things tend to have a help a home sell for a higher price.
Mm-hmm.
Then to me,
on average, 21% more.
If you're saving $1,500 in advertising costs, but you're losing out on $15,000 in the purchase price,
potential
that doesn't that's a moot point.
But again, we talk about this all the time that real estate is a free market, right? It's an open
correct
open market, and I feel like by taking away the visibility and getting as many eyes on the property as possible by being on market, you're hurting your seller. You're not really, really doing the most as the realtor for your seller, unless right. you're off market and you are just plowing through your own personal marketing for it. Like that's the only way I can see it being beneficial, because by having a house on market, especially in a market that we're in, like we're in right now,
right.
If you price it right, if you market it right, you're going to create the competition. You're
going
to create, which then can drive up the cost of the house and net your sellers more money. So I don't know. I don't understand the benefit of off market listings, I guess. And maybe it's just my infancy in the industry, but the whole point of having that is to create the competition that then drives.
There's a few agents that do that here in Colorado.
I think so.
I was on a list of private listings.
Yeah. Oscar, tell me this, because you have more experience than I do in this portion of it. I would assume there is a market for off-market listings, but I think, and tell me if I'm wrong, it skews more towards the fixer-upper investor project homes that would mm-hmm. not necessarily do well to the mass consumer of like, I want this in front of everybody. It's like, hey, I got somebody that like maybe in some financial hardship that like wants to sell, but it's not sure, but like for the right price, they don't want to advertise
sure.
it. They want it. They're going to take a low ball offer. Is that what do you think?
I mean, when it's in the investment realm, there's definitely a lot of off market stuff, a
mm-hmm.
ton.
Mm-hmm.
I don't see a benefit, and I didn't understand. And the agent, I did some showings in Highlands Ranch, and I stumbled upon a house that one of my clients really liked, and there was a sign in front of the house, but mm-hmm. I could not find it on the MLS. So I called the agent, and the agent called me back, and he goes, oh, it's a private listing. I was like, okay, can I not see it? He said, no, you can. I'll send you an email, and I'll also email you everything else we have. And then I jokingly said, is this kind of like VIP, what's going on? And he said, no, we have there's just some people that rather not be on the open market. And he explained to me why it didn't still make sense to me.
Yeah, I know.
It doesn't make
sense.
If you're
a compass agent, if you're part
because
of
there
this,
was a sign in front of his house.
Like, but please reach us out. Leave us a comment. Let us know. Like, how do you feel about this? What do you think about this?
If you're anything, agent? As an agent, you're maybe because then you could double end the deal. You know, and the consumer needs to use you as a listing agent. I don't understand. It's for me. part of my spiel is that my software is going to put your listing on everyone's website, whether you're Remax or any, I don't care who you are. If you have a website, my syndication is going to reach your website and put it on, like your listing, because my job is to sell the house, not hoard the buyer. So I don't know. See, that'd be interesting. I don't understand.
And it says, the one thing that I am going to point out here is that the benefits for seller, nothing here talks about cost. Nothing here talks about sales points, about making more money or anything. And in fact, on the buyer's side, it's saying potential for better deals. With less competition, sellers might be more willing to accept a fair offer to achieve a quick and private sale, potentially leading to a better deal for the buyer. So you make a decision as a company to do something that is known to hurt
one side of the seller.
Yeah, one side of the
transaction. Well, you know what's still insane about all of this, right? All of it, is you get these people and these companies that continue to treat houses as if you were selling a laptop.
Merchandise.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Merchandise. And it even says it in this article, right? I don't know who this guy is. Piskorski. He is a... Let's see who Piskorski is.
If he's Russian, leave it alone, man.
No.
We don't need that kind of smoke.
He honestly sounds pretty Polish. I'm just trying to find out who he is as far as like a
source.
As a source. Because he has a quote in here that I want to... I just want to see what he does.
Hold on. While you're looking that up.
Here it is. Okay. Thomas Piskorski, but he's got an unnecessary Z at the end of his name. A real estate professor at Columbia Business School. Okay? First off, why?
Mm-hmm.
So, he, at the end of this, and this is why I got
my degree in real estate but from this is Columbia.
Why, but this is what I'm saying. This is why I think people are just college? This is why I think people are out of touch. He goes, in the end, customers value convenience and speed maximized by current trends. First off, he uses the word trends. What do we know about trends? They don't last. Mm-hmm. They just don't. That's why Rocket Mortgage became the largest U.S. lender, even though it charged slightly higher rates because people were willing to pay for a seamless digital experience, right? Which is fine but hear me out. Lending is a monetary product. Right. There's very few factors that go into lending other than your credit score and your rate and so on and so forth. Right.
It's very checkbox.
But this is what he says. A real estate professor from Columbia.
That's what I'm saying.
Columbia's the trend like doesn't
it's bode like the price
well
fighter in Maryland
for small independent brokerages. He says the holy grail is digital closing. You click on a house, you reserve it, you see the appraisal and title instantly, get loan offers, and become a homeowner in days instead of weeks. Someone, please, tell me how, unless we figure out a way where every neighborhood, school district, sidewalk, amenity, average income of area, job location is static throughout the United States. Oh, also, let's throw in climate, topography, weather pattern, flooding, etc. is identical. How you are going to sit there and make that happen, okay? Because currently, you can have, at this point, even with rates where they're at, you can have three houses in the same fucking neighborhood go through three wildly different transactions based on three individual families wanting three individual things with 18 individual things wrong with those specific houses that have to go through negotiations and contractors
appraisal,
to get different things
inspection
fixed and appraisals and inspections and so on and so forth. But my point is, I think what's happening is like companies get this idea in their head.
Streamlining.
Going, I'm going to streamline everything. Mm-hmm. And everybody keeps treating housing like a laptop and saying, I'm going to make this process efficient. And they're forgetting that the main components of this process are highly flawed people.
Mm-hmm. I don't like insulting people. That dude's an idiot. you know, it's.
But he's a real estate professor at Columbia.
Okay, so he's gonna analyze.
Maybe it's Columbia. Maybe it was
Columbia. No, so he's gonna sit there and really structure all of that with all the variables that you just fired out, which was a lot. And
that was just off the top of my head off of one transaction
and
I just had.
And, and negate the fact that they dropped billions of dollars in marketing. That's why they grew.
Mm-hmm.
Period. Marketing. Mm-hmm. Every other commercial. They were on Super Bowls in World Series. It was Rocket Mortgage, Rocket Mortgage. Down your effing throat. That's why they grew. I don't give a shit.
Well, none of that. What he just said blows my mind because
he negates all the money they dumped into marketing. That's why they grew. Period.
And the paragraph he said before that was people pay for convenience.
Mm-hmm.
So he literally said Rocket Mortgage pays higher fees than people use them because it makes life easier.
Mm.
And then the breath goes, oh, but by the way, the Holy Grail is to make things easier so it's cheaper. So those two things don't even mesh in general.
Not cheaper. And most of the closings that I had to – so it was hit or miss. I've had some pretty good transactions with Rocket Mortgage that were traditional 30 days. Nothing sooner. Most of them were 45 to 60 days.
But either –
because Rocket Mortgage dropped –
either way, even if Rocket Mortgage
is
good, bad, or indifferent, right? Charlie, you've gone through a couple transactions where you've had to go through different – less of negotiation. Mm-hmm. I'm using you because you've been heavy first-time homebuyers right, in general. Oscar and I have had a really good mix of both, right? If we ask any of our clients right now, if they have the time, the energy, or the knowledge to pick up a phone and negotiate directly with the other seller, whether it be via using ChatGPT or a computer system or anything else, to negotiate items and find contractors and get people out there to get bids and all these different things, there's not a way that even if the platform allows somebody to do that, the people don't have the time to do it or the energy or even the will to do it. Because if they did, those would be that 20% subset of the population that is buying and selling property on their own, 100%. Which is fine.
And
that's always
going to
be the case.
I think digital and quick closings are just coming across the board. A lot of title companies are adapting, and another big dog, UWM, they do digital closings. You can save money and time by doing digital title. That's good and dandy.
No, that's
whatever.
Fine.
But like Jameson said, you're going to have an extreme difference from one buyer to the next and everything in between. And you cannot cookie cutter this.
No.
You just cannot. So, and you have to have time for inspection. Everybody's life is different. Schedule's different. Mm-hmm. Appraisals. Maybe one house has something. I mean, again, the same block, same house, two different interiors. Mm-hmm.
But the reason I bring all of that up is because when we talk about why did this merger happen, based on these articles that I'm reading and why Compass and Anywhere came together, is because that is what they are trying to accomplish. They are trying to get everything consolidated, and they're trying to pool the resources so that they can make that seamless experience to then eventually automate everything so that they can reach this holy grail that Thomas Pitowski Piskorski
from Colombia
says is going to be the holy grail, which ironically is that article from Open Door that I sent you that showed that people are going to be able to buy, sell, and somehow return houses online in the next 5 years that everybody thinks is going to happen.
Oh, and I can't wait till the first screw up. And
bro, I had an appraisal on my on an FHA loan. I had an appraisal come back and say it wasn't approved. It couldn't be appraised because the paint was chipped on an exterior shed that was not attached to the home.
Mm-hmm. Yep. They call that more and more these days.
Right, but like
deck and like shed.
You're telling me that, okay, that happens. And then the person's at work. They send an email. Hey, closing date's coming up. We have to get this done. That person doesn't look at their email until they get home at 5:30, 6:30 p.m. And now it's after hours, so they have to wait to the next day. And oh, by the way, that company's not open until they get to work the next day. So then they have to call the company on their lunch break to then negotiate and tell them when they can go back out there and then reach out to the listing. I just don't see it.
Oh, no, there's a button for that.
Like
I had to get a Colorado crime scene.
This isn't Minecraft.
Like I
had to get a Colorado crime scene cleanup crew to de-infestate a house because of hantavirus before I could close.
Jeez.
Mm-hmm.
Is there a button for that? Fucking easy
button
for that? Mm-hmm.
There's an easy button.
Yeah. And so
hantavirus, mouse poop.
So option C, please.
So let me ask you guys this. Now that I sit and think about it, we're seeing...
I got kids. They ain't going to Colombia, that's for sure.
We're seeing we're seeing the wealth gap rise at a rate that we haven't seen ever in the United mm-hmm. States as of right now. What I'm thinking of...
Hold on. I've been watching the Gilded Age. Uh-huh. There was a pretty big gap back then.
Oh, yeah. Well,
I'm just saying.
But in my mind, the way I think about this is, what if you have now an entire subset of luxury listings that are just controlled within themselves? So the only people that can access those listings are the people who are millionaires, are multimillionaires. So
they're already doing it. They're buying HGTV. There's a monopoly on that.
When
right
we talk about... But do you see what I'm saying? Like, it seems like a perfect setup. It seems like a perfect setup to have a entire inventory of luxury homes controlled by a single entity.
I disagree. Well, let me rephrase that. I can see where you're going with that. I don't think the private exclusive listing and, like, stranglehold of off-market listings will result in that because of anybody, of any subset of the population that is willing to pay for convenience and pay for quality, it's the millionaires of this world.
Well,
they will pay for quality.
And what I mean by that is, but what I mean by that is, let's say you have a Denver Bronco that's selling their home, they bought it, it's a multi-million-dollar home, whatever it may be, right? I get the privacy factor. They don't want people to know where they're living until they sell.
Most of them buy them in LLCs anyways.
But my point is, I see that element of the privacy of, like, you do have that high-profile person that doesn't want random people coming to do a showing at their house. I get that point. But at the same time, I just see this only available if it's available to you kind of mentality. Like, they're only going to...
Okay, let me take it a step further. Your generation mm-hmm. is pretty pissed off of the affordability of having the American dream, buy a house, get married, mm-hmm. and all that stuff. This is further yanking it from
you. Yeah, exactly.
It's just skewing it even more.
Yes, and that's what I mean.
Could see
it's like
that.
I'm looking at it.
Now, now not only can you afford it, we're going to make it exclusive.
Exactly.
That's kind of shit.
Yeah, and that's what I'm saying. It almost creates like this... It almost puts you in a poor category. Like, it's like, oh, you're not eligible for these private listings. You're not good enough for them. And I get that how it works now, but to make an entire brokerage, a conglomerate that is based on that, I feel like goes against everything that the free market is and the point of it.
And what's crazy is I know the board got sued, mm-hmm. But the board was created so this wouldn't happen.
Exactly. Yeah. That's what
the board of realtors mm-hmm. was created for more equal and uniformed business dealings within real estate. And, you know, as much as we are a little bit of a just all over the place, we're still more structured than a lot of the rest of the world, period. I was watching a segment on Australia. They're dealing with a lot of auctions. China, a lot of developers overdeveloped and didn't perform. People have mortgages on houses that don't exist.
China's real estate market is scary right now.
Ooh, can I make a point real quick? Sorry.
Absolutely.
I thought about this, and it was super funny, right? Because this is a total tangent, so I apologize, Oscar. So bookmark what you're about to say, because I know where you're going with this.
I already forgot.
And it's a great point.
No, go for it. You're good.
So there's a huge, and it keeps coming up, about realtor fees in the U.S. and how we're twice what the rest of the world is, right? And if you go to, like, Australia, you go to England, you go to Spain, wherever else, they charge 1%-ish, to maybe 2% total on real estate transactions, right? Everybody goes, oh, the U.S., I can't believe you guys charge 5%, 6%. However, in those other areas, we are one of, I think, two countries, maybe three, that offer 30-year fixed-rate mortgages, okay? Mm-hmm. Everybody else is between, like, 2 and 5 year. That's as much as you get. What that translates to, however, is that in other countries, people buy and sell their houses at 5 times the rate that they do here in the U.S. So yes, we do charge a higher fee for transactions here, but we do almost 4 times less transactions in the United States than they do in other countries. So yes, maybe realtors in Australia only charge 2%. However, they're doing 4 times the transactions because people are on the move 4 times as much.
Not only that, but there is no... there was no structure behind that. So a lot of those is skewed and they're actually double charging and they're not documenting.
Correct.
So they're just pretty much stealing.
So we were on the same page.
Yeah, we're on the same page. Exactly the same.
Yep.
So yeah, no, that segue exactly to where we are at least structured.
Correct.
And very transparent.
Yep.
With our fees and our business doings.
Yes. And that was a good fallout, I think, from the lawsuit, right? The NAR mm-hmm. lawsuit is the transparency of like where the fees go.
In India, they're charging the fee and not even
so on and so forth.
You know.
Yeah. So we talked about the private exclusive listings, Charlie. So we talked about obviously the privacy mm-hmm. makes sense. This cost savings don't make sense whatsoever. What was the other one that you pointed out?
No, he contradicted his cost savings.
Control and flexibility.
So control
is they maintain greater control over who views their home and the timing of the showings.
So that does make sense. And I think we talked about mm-hmm. that if you do have a busy life, if you do and you are off market, mm-hmm. then yes. And there's an agent, a lot of people know him, Jordan Cohen. He's the number one REMAX agent on the planet. He does a lot of private exclusives in Los Angeles area, California, but his average selling point is like $6.5 million.
But that's right. His price point is you can't afford it if you
also,
have to ask.
But that mm-hmm. is because he also conducts every showing and he has a great book. It's The Listing Agent. Yeah. I mm-hmm. gave that to you, right? But that is also because there are people that, you know, are living in that house that don't want to be disturbed, so on and so forth. So that makes sense. The control makes sense. However, I would argue that with public showings, it goes back to that, do you want eyeballs on your mm-hmm. house and how quickly do you want it to sell? Because the more available your home is to the public, the quicker it's going to sell. I have had people that work from home, have kids, have dogs, so on and so forth, that we've purposely, I have it right now with a listing, that we're purposely moving and vacating the property mm-hmm. before we list so mm-hmm. that they don't have to deal with, you know, shuttling three kids and two dogs out yep. and so on and so forth. So it's less disruptive to their lives. But that's a conversation
let me ask your agent,
right? To figure out what the goal is versus what you guys can financially do as a seller and buyer that makes sense in the whole grand scheme of the plan of selling your property.
With that same point that you're making, why hasn't companies like Orchard dominated then? Because basically they're removing any showings or anything. They're buying you out so you don't have to deal with showings.
Because you don't make as much.
Or lending pad.
Because you don't make as much.
Or all that stuff.
Look at what happened to Redfin.
Yeah, you don't make
as
much.
Open door.
Yeah, their whole model fell apart on them.
I can keep going. Yeah. I mean, you know? there have been endless amount of companies trying new things.
Trying to change the game.
Mm-hmm. I mean, assist to sell. How long have they been around? Mm-hmm. Forever. So I don't understand, besides the fact that they're trying to monopolize and just dominate the industry on the real estate side, on our side of the mm-hmm. transaction, they're trying to rope in the consumer and saying, oh, look, this is a good thing we're doing. No, you're just trying to monopolize and hoard agents. Yep. That's about it.
I agree.
At the end of the day, that's
monopolize resources and
sure,
hoard agents.
Sure. So they're spit shining turds that have not worked in the past.
And their goal is, and this is the stat on that. Mm-hmm. To your point, at the end of this, when they do conglomerate, coagulate, I guess would be the term, right? Like a blood clot. they're going to control 20% of the market.
Mm-hmm.
So it's still not massive.
So right. It's what's funny is, so I did the flip side. I looked up and said, what are the negatives of an off-market listing? And the one that I like the most on here, so there's three. Missed bidding wars, we talked about that already. And it notes the fact that it's going to lead to lower prices because you're not going to have as much competition.
Crazy how that works. That's right? Weird.
Market control.
Uncertain market value.
Right.
And it says, without open market to provide comparable sales, it's difficult to determine a property's highest possible value, potentially leading to sellers for less than it's worth. So my question now, let's say you have a neighborhood that has a bunch of Compass agents in it, and they do these off-market deals.
Right.
Right.
Crystal Valley.
Would you be hurting your neighbors for not having that on the listing so then they can do a comparative analysis for their
I don't think so because – and only because once it sells
– will they allow a co-op if we find it? And we're like, I got a buyer. You're a Compass agent. Can we buy it?
Well, no. Mm-hmm. I'm saying you would assume, right?
Right.
You get a call. It's just like a like –
you have to.
Like
you kind of have to,
like
right?
Like a FSBO.
I'm sure there's – yeah.
Like for somebody I don't. But I think it depends on if they are then required to – state publicly that it was sold and for what price.
Mm-hmm.
Because if they're not,
then it
would hurt. Because then you're like, I.
Mm-hmm. The next one that's one up. Lawsuit ready to go.
Yeah, correct. Exactly. Yes. And the reason.
One's in the chamber, they're cocking this back. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's going to bite them in the ass.
Absolutely. And so the last one it says is appraisal issues. And that's why it brings it up and says, If a buyer is financing the purchase, they'll need an appraisal. With no active listings on the MLS to provide that data, the appraisal could come in lower than the negotiated off-market.
Now, I will say this. That is a little incorrect because the appraisal should not go off active listings. It should go off closed.
Yeah, but it, again, if...
But if they are not required to divulge publicly... Now, you can go, I mean, depending on the appraiser.
I mean, how many times do you find...
You should be able to go public record and say, okay, this last sold for X price. It's just not going to show up on... From a real estate standpoint, it's not going to show up for us if they don't publicly list it in RE Colorado as a comp, right? But on the county assessor, obviously, the title is going to change. It's going to show up somewhere.
It's going to hurt them if they don't put it because appraisers are a third company, a third party company,
right.
And they pull their stuff from our MLS. So they're going to close it private, but then they're going to dump it on the MLS.
But it's also going to hurt the compass agent because they're not going to be able to convince every single seller to not list their property publicly. So eventually they're going to run into an issue where if they are in that neighborhood and there's a bunch of compass
agents.
Maybe
we need some insight.
And then there's going to be
compass agent.
Yeah, and then there's going to be a seller's like, wait a second. No, I want my property listed. And then the compass agent goes, well, shit. It's comp-wise, I'm not really sure what to list your property at because I got nothing.
Right.
You know what I'm saying? So, like, I think at the end of the day.
And then what does that do to value? The comp on the MLS says this. Our private comps say this.
Mm-hmm. Right.
I mean, really, you're going to create a whole nother market,
right? Mm-hmm. Yeah, you're creating a sub market,
right?
Yes,
like a subreddit.
Yeah,
100%.
But that's again what I was going back to, like this luxury sub market of like.
Right.
I get that,
and I do, but I will say depending on the luxury market, like I think once you get over that like in Colorado, like
three to four mil.
It is a sub-market because those houses should be absolutely
three to four mil in Colorado. That custom. is elite,
and that you is something like, where you don't really got to go. But two and a half up to 3 million, you're gonna find something that comps
especially
out.
Here. Yeah, under three especially mil, Colorado, it's just
but
higher
if you
price
go,
point.
Once you go above that, and you're at 12,000 square feet, or you're on
47 acres,
those
do
or
deserve
whatever,
their own entity.
Then I think so.
Yes,
under that though, I agree.
Yeah,
with you.
And I don't know. It just seems wrong.
But remember that one, the film that I sent you, and I was like, Charlie, you have to call these guys.
Mm-hmm.
It was a $33 million estate.
Yeah,
I think up in Conifer or something like that.
Oh yeah.
Oh, they had shit for marketing.
Horrible.
I sent it to Charlie. I was like, yo, you need to call these agents.
Yeah.
Because whoever did this video for them, oh my God, I could have done
like
better on Canva.
It's like,
it was crap.
There's a house in Vail that is for sale right now. It's going to be the most expensive listing in Colorado. And it's listed at like, I think it's like $296 million or $196 million.
Crap.
And it's not massive, but it's like three different houses. It's on like
side of a mountain,
30 acres, but it backs up to Peak 9. Mm-hmm. It's got ski access and whatever. But like but it is listed publicly. It's on Redfin, right? You're telling me like that person's not sitting there going, well, I need privacy. And no, like fuck that. He's like, I want as many people. And oh, by the way, they threw it in the Denver Post.
Yeah.
That's what I'm saying. Like
$290 million house. I got to put
there
it
is
in
a reason,
everybody's hair.
Mm-hmm. There is a reason that in economic history, the number one most successful economic blueprint has been laissez-faire, which is just free market economy, because it allows people. Now, there's going to be hiccups and so on and so forth, but the free market will always, always, always come out on top because it eliminates so many other factors. It just does. And you are always going to have people that are going to come in and they're going to think they're going to have the bright idea or the holy grail or whatever it is. And I don't think that's going to happen. Opendoor, perfect example. Zestimates, perfect example. iBuyer, perfect example.
Oh man,
hey,
I'm so glad they're gone.
We've got the plan.
Mm-hmm.
You know what I'm saying? Like that's what it is. New build home incentives. We've got the plan. No, because the free market is dictating. You motherfuckers are running out of money now.
Mm-hmm.
Weird. Yep. Like it's the
when
free
Open Door
market
came
will
here,
always, always, always win.
I think they dropped $3 billion.
Who?
Open Door when they came to Colorado.
Oh yeah.
Like they were like gung ho, and I was like, what are they doing?
Now they're
your model does not work here. But they did forecast it enough to where they did make some cash.
They are now categorized
as a legit meme.
Chapter 17 bankruptcy.
No, legit. As a meme stock.
Oh, crap.
They were down to $1 a share. Mm-hmm. And they are currently up to $8 a share, specifically for the same reason that
GameStop was
went up.
Oh, shit.
Like, that's how that is how their business model went.
Mm-hmm.
Mm-hmm. Like that's how bad it was.
And this is someone that dropped billions.
Billions.
Not millions. Billions.
Billions, because they said our business plan is we're going to take the fix and flip business model and we're going to make it efficient. We're going to make it digital. And we're going to sit there. We're going to slap lipstick on a pig and people are going to buy our shit. And we're going to set our own
comps.
But we're
going to hoard.
We're going to try and manipulate comps in a free market. Mm-hmm. And guess what happened? It didn't fucking work.
They failed. Yep. It's going to be an interesting case study. I'm excited to watch what happens and see it. And see if they do. Because at the end of the day, yes, 20% of the market is.
Also, if you're a custom or a Compass agent watching this, I'd love to see. I'd love to hear an opinion. Yeah. You know? Yeah.
Give us a call. I have a good good contact for. He's level headed and he's a good agent.
This conversation was sparked because I also have an agent I've worked with previously. And
I could call him right now. You want to put him on the phone? Yeah. I'll put him on the phone right now.
They posted. Their brokerage has a website of off-market listings. Mm-hmm. And it was like, let's go contact me for off-market listings. I'm like, why? Like, how is this benefiting anybody?
Mm-hmm. You're about to piss some people off.
Like, how is this benefiting anyone? I don't understand.
I don't see the benefit at the end of the day.
And again, I think they're just spinning off the fact that they want to hoard as many agents and just monopolize the industry a little bit and strong arm the rest of us.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's going to bite you in the butt, man.
I do. I agree.
The consumers.
Yeah, I think so, too.
And the era of the internet, stuff like that doesn't work anymore.
I think this sounds like a good time to move into the One Rock takeaway for today's episode.
I agree.
What's the other? So the Columbia realtor?
Mm-hmm. Thomas.
Thomas. I'm going to find, a realtor for,
No, he's not a realtor. He is a professor of real estate.
So is that the same, like, if I find a professor of real estate at Juilliard's?
I mean, come on, man.
Like,
bro, it's a $350 course.
I know.
Teaching at Columbia in real estate. Like, I'm sorry. I want to now, hold on. If you graduated from Columbia with a real estate degree, please comment. Let us know. I want to talk to you.
You better be doing 350 deals a year.
I want to talk to you.
Minimum.
That's wild. Okay, so for my One Rock takeaway, I think that it's going to be, if it ain't broke, don't fix it. You know, and I understand that there needs to be changes, there needs to be optimizations and investments. But at the end of the day, we know what works, we know what helps. So benefit on that and help grow that side of it instead of trying to do your own thing.
I'm just going to drop this. When the lawsuit happened with the board, I knew that it was going to be an uphill battle, but something had to come to light. And I'm not defending the board. I am part of the board. It's in my marketing. I have to be a realtor. But the board was formed to help the consumer. And if you're going to bring lawsuits and bring problems and just skew everything, bring resolution, not just myths, I guess. I'm a little bit scatterbrained right now, but like with the board, they slapped us around. They said you can't price fix it. Okay, there probably was some bad eggs there, but bring a resolution. Just say you need a change, figure it out. With what they're doing, I think they're hoarding, and they're involving the consumer, which has nothing to do with this. They're just buying out big real estate firms. And instead of someone pointing the fingers like, hey, man, you're monopolizing on something, they're like, no. This is going to benefit the consumer. This has nothing to do with the consumer. Not one bit. They want to hoard some. They're buying market share.
Yep.
That's
literally what they're doing.
They are buying market share, and they're involving the consumer and saying, we're going to make it easier for you, and we're going to make it more convenient. No, you're not. Where's that meme? Mm-hmm. No, you're not.
Yep.
The guy that says, I'm going to play with one ball. No, you're not. Mm. You're not benefiting the consumer. You're hoarding the agents and you're trying to monopolize. That's it. Just call it what it is.
Yeah.
I'll have more respect for you if you're just like, you know what? We're going to take over. Okay, I'll respect you for that. Don't involve the consumer. That has nothing to do with the consumer.
Every brokerage makes money off of their agents. Compass just found a way to pick up another 60,000 agents to make money.
And that's a lot.
Mm-hmm.
On average, even if they took...
Right.
20%. Right. That's a lot of money.
Yeah. 340,000 agents makes a brokerage a lot of money.
And Cardis hoards corporate America. Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Relocation, that's them. They are the big dog.
Yep. I am going, my rock takeaway has to do with this bourbon.
With what?
This bourbon.
Oh. Mm.
We've tasted a lot of bourbons over the years. 3 years we've been doing this.
Over 100.
And there's a reason that there's certain recipes and there's certain way of doing things and there's certain processes that have been in place since 1867. And you see the pendulum swing in relation to trends and like what's the shiny new object and what's the new way of doing things and all these different, you know, like
E.H. Taylor ain't never going to put a stave in the bottle.
Right.
Hell no.
And I think with real estate, because it is always going to be seen as a wealth building engine, mm-hmm. whether individual, family, corporation, people are always going to try and figure out how to make it more efficient, how to make it less costly, how to squeeze every ounce of water out of the rock. Right.
They're going to try to spin the table to get the same result.
At mm-hmm. the end of the day, I think the fundamentals stay the same in the sense that it is a business of people interacting with people. And it will always be that way. Mm-hmm. And my one rock takeaway in all of this is as we're looking at this and we're kind of parsing through the headlines and we're talking about the different trends and we're talking about all these mergers and acquisitions and technology and holy grails and blah, 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 blah. If you are in this business and you do it for the right reasons and you do it the right way and you treat people the right way in the business, you are going to be more successful over the long run than if you're chasing the newest thing mm-hmm. and the newest way of doing business and all that other bullshit.
Here, here.
Cheers to that.
No.
I love it.
Yes.
I like it. Yeah. I like it. Well, great episode. Great, great topic. Again, guys, like, follow, share, comment. Let us know what you think about this. If you're a consumer, how does it make you feel? What do you think? If you're an agent, how do you feel about it? And what do you think about it? Let us know in the comments.
Drop us some knowledge if you're a Compass agent. We're not dogging you out. We just need to know.
Yeah.
Or if you're a Century 21 agent, or if you're Sotheby's, or if you're
Century
Better
21
Home and
still
Garden,
exists.
They're under the umbrella of mm-hmm. Anywhere real estate.
Oh shit.
Coldwell Banker, same thing. Like all those agents are now under this merger.
Yep.
So tell us what you guys.
Maybe it will revive them. Yeah. I'm sorry.
I love it.
Metro love Brokers. It.
Yeah. Let's go ahead and move into the bourbon review for today's episode. And on today's episode, we are drinking Colonel E.H. Taylor, small batch, bottled in bond, 100 proof.
Delicious.
The top shelf recognized across the world.
E.H. Taylor's.
I want to get my nose in JC's glass and see, because I did do a smaller second pour, mm-hmm. But I want to see, because with these glasses, I don't know.
We have to.
I feel like a proud parent. I'm like, yeah, pick it up, drink it. It's going to be good. It's going to be great.
Oh, yeah. Oh, yeah.
This is probably one of the most solid bulletproof bottles of bourbon you'll ever buy.
Yeah, it really is.
You pick it up once, you're going to drink it again. You'll take a break from it, drink it again, you're going to be like, still the same. Same.
Yeah, these. If you're a bourbon drinker, I will put the link to these glasses.
You better make some money, Charlie.
It's the exact same as it was an hour.
This is a great vessel.
Yeah.
The Glen Cairns originally, right? They're kind of bulbous on the bottom. This kind of traps everything in. I mean, the ergonomics and engineering of this vessel glass that we're drinking out of.
Pass me the glass.
I really dig this, Charlie. Yeah. Good job on this one.
Thank you.
Through him and him with him.
Oh, man. Oh, man.
Pope Francis Amoros.
Mm. Mm.
So it actually got, the nose, as that sat.
The nose stayed the same.
The nose stayed the same. But whew, that, damn. That oil,
yeah, it did.
Right? That silk,
mm-hmm.
because it sat
gritty.
And wasn't swirled around, it got silkier.
Yep.
Oh yeah.
So that that soft.
It went from soft mouthfeel to maybe that, even creamy.
Yes. It oh, it's damn, like hold velvety. On. It is almost. It's a, it is a velvet.
Mm-hmm. It's silk.
Dude. Yeah.
Velvet. And then
what is that? Velvet? Flavor,
and like, then there's silk.
Yes.
It really this did.
The way
but it's still it's silk with the burn.
It is mm-hmm. with the burn.
Wow.
Mm-hmm. But you still get that berry on the front. You get that tobacco charcoal, but mix that vanilla. So, okay. Actually, Charlie, follow me here. So remember we were talking last night about that the Buffalo Trace and the cigar.
Yep.
You're like, is this the that new Buffalo Trace? And we're like, no, it's just how it intermingles.
Mm-hmm.
Like that flavor that is this.
Yes.
But without the cigar.
Yes. Mm-hmm. I'm right there with you.
Yeah.
Yeah. It's so in my glass that I have been swirling, sitting on, I feel like the flavor comes on heavier and faster in my glass.
Versus, that is a slow burn.
Yes. That is the, you take a sip and it is evolution.
The longevity is.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Okay, even after I passed the glass to Oscar, I was sitting there, I was like the, the vanilla almost like, it like boom, it, hello, I'm here at the back end of the palate. It, that's wild. That it,
no, the personality of this bourbon is damn.
Well, you could like you said at the beginning, since the Civil War, like this is age. This is age. But this is.
This is what I'm saying. Like when you have, and I
if it again, ain't broke. This don't is what fix
it's.
It.
Once you find something that works, and again, and not to harp on it, but like Oscar's been, you've been in here for what 17 years,
and what
real estate,
21.
Okay, and the average realtor lifespan is less than 5. Right. So there's a reason that 87% crash out prior to 5 years. Because the ones that
hold
find
on, time out, do we need to put the suicide hotline here?
What's no,
the,
no,
we,
no.
Where are you going with this?
No, what I'm saying is the ones that find the formula,
yes.
Right, stay. And then once you figure out that formula, you build on that success because you have that track record.
And I'm knocking on wood because I've always said I don't care how hard the market gets or how much my bills drive me crazy. I have never sold anyone a property for the profit.
Right. Mm-hmm. That's what I'm saying. Like,
so with that said,
right. Once you works, find it and it works, then it doesn't need to be the latest and greatest. Mm-hmm. And I have this like
tried
the technology
and true.
Can
need.
Be used to
excel, promote, push
no,
up,
like to
upbring.
Make your life a little easier. Right. Mm-hmm. And to like help alleviate some pressures and so on and so forth, but the core of the business
is always the same.
The core of the bourbon, how you make the bourbon, is the same. You can package it differently, right? Like you can change the bottle and so on and so forth, but like even with E.H. Taylor, like they trademark all the way down to the, and this is actually crazy, the yellow of the label is trademarked by E.H. Taylor.
That is their own color yellow.
That is their own color yellow.
Oh man,
nobody
I'm glad
else
I painted can because that's the paint on the walls of my
nobody
house.
Nobody else can use
JC
that
sold
yellow.
It to me.
You know what I'm saying?
Mm-hmm.
So like, but they know, and it's recognizable. So that's what I'm saying. Like, I think it correlates well because we are in an industry that is so trend heavy and so like technology forward, and everybody's trying to figure out like because it's one.
Everybody's
of the,
trying to. Everybody always comes to real estate to make a quick.
It's
buck.
One of the and it's one of the last industries that's like really people to people driven. That's like, how do you figure this stuff?
Mm-hmm.
It's like, no, dude, like we are one of the last asset classes in on the planet that is still so personal and
you
so emotional.
You have to.
You cannot take the human element out of it.
You, it's
and
impossible.
People are so pissed off that are in these positions of power. Like, no, we're going to take. You can't.
It's an emotional process.
You can't do it. You can't do it. And people are pissed off and they keep trying. Just like people keep trying to change bourbon. E.H. Taylor comes in and goes, hey. Since
sit down.
Since the
sit
Civil
down,
War,
son,
let me learn you something in my rocking chair and my shotgun. Mm-hmm. I've been doing this.
I've been chewing the fat with everybody on the block.
You sang the Star Spangled Banner. The guy that wrote it drank my bourbon.
Or
I love that.
He's probably the one that sang it. the first
you
time.
You know what I'm saying? So,
Jamo, what is the bottle run?
I got this for $129.
And you know what? This is one of the few bottles that if you can get it under that price, definitely get it. But one of the few bottles that I will happily hand over that money for.
Yeah, $129.
I'm gonna lean on you two for this. That it sounds like from my experience that every time that you do pay that, you're getting the same experience. You
absolutely
know what you're expecting.
Oh, it's not. It doesn't
from
change.
E.H. Taylor. And that to me, that is more valuable.
Yes,
to a bourbon
change.
Than anything else.
I have.
No, I've probably had this bottle six times, and it's been the same.
Never
disappointed. And we even, I'll tell you a quick side story. So when I first got into bourbon, we went to Joey's house in the Ozarks. This is before you guys came down. And we, Joey had E.H. Taylor, Eagle Rare 10, Blanton's, Pappy.
Oh, yeah, the blind taste? Is that what you're talking about?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And Buffalo Trace. And then we threw, not Stag, we threw something else in. Fuck, I forget what it was.
Was it a Midsummer Night's Dram?
No, because that was too, it was too similar. I forget what it was. Anyway, doesn't matter. But we did a blind taste test. And the Pappy was, well, I think it was a 16-year. It was a good Pappy. It was, it was an $800 bottle. We did a blind taste test. Out of seven of
Tried
us.
And true.
Out of seven of us, six rated this the highest.
I'm sorry, but I'm going to... I think Blanton's is the biggest fucking scam.
No, I don't disagree. No, with you.
So that, and that's I don't what disagree, I was say.
But I'm just
so
saying in general, like,
Blanton's, because it's a good drinker.
Mm-hmm.
I have never paid on camera. I have never paid over $70 for a bottle of Blanton's.
I think
ever.
$79 bucks for Blanton's.
I was waiting to the that's allocation. Fine. I go pick
and
it up, $60 bucks.
But $300?
It's a $60.
Yeah. No.
It's a $60 bottle of bourbon. Mm-hmm. This, if it's and I have the cash in pocket, $130 bucks. Mm-hmm. $150 I'll pay for it.
So
there's a little more history for maybe a few of us here.
Yeah.
Yes, but I agree with that.
It
but even still.
Even still, it is my wheelhouse with the proofing and just the mash bill.
You know what's funny, Oscar, that you say that is if you this was the first one I think that we've had that I understand fully understand what you're talking about with your bourbon flavor profile where this is, it's rounded, but it's grounded. Like it has an evolution. There is a sweetness to it, but the sweetness doesn't overpower and the rest of the bourbon can show through. So I think like this is the first time for me where I would have tasted this and been like, oh shit, this is Oscar. Like Oscar would like this because it does hold the grit of what bourbon is, but then give you more of an experience to what the actual juice in the bottle is.
It's grit and sophistication in the bottle.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's a great bourbon.
All right,
gratification.
I gotta take a sip because I'm
coin that shit. Put it on a T-shirt.
I'm struggling. I gotta be honest with you. I'm struggling with the rating.
Are you really?
I am. Only and the only reason I say that is because I'm the only one here that doesn't have the experience with it. So I want to be as genuine as possible.
No, you're good. I'm in
so
my
you guys
head.
Go. You guys all go right. Start doing your ratings, and I'm gonna sit with it for a little. I'm gonna spend some time with it. I'm gonna talk to you a little bit.
Yep. No, you're good.
You guys go for it.
You're good. What you got?
1.2.
Okay.
1.2. It's one of my favorites. It just really is. It's damn near perfect. Not quite the unicorn that we look for, but top five all day.
Yeah. I mean, I'm gonna put this up with Old Soul. I think the difference between this and Old Soul, especially with JC's glass, is it holds the burn a little bit better. Old Soul, I think, was a little bit more on the sweet end. So you kind of sacrifice a little bit of complexity, but you keep the burn. And again, I'm also coming from, I've had this bottle five times, and every single time it is the
spot
same.
Spot on.
It
spot
is the on. Same. So I am going to go...
1.5.
I don't want 5.
You're paid.
No. No. Hold on. Sorry. Let's do this. 1.5.
H. Taylor's always.
Yeah. 1.5.
Okay.
One of my favorite bourbons by far.
I'm sorry for the silence, but. Okay. So.
It's a little bit of a religious experience.
Well, that's what honestly I don't want to do a disservice to the listeners to the bottle itself. Okay.
Be honest
so,
because
yeah, no, and that and
it's a clean slate for you.
Yeah, and that's where so I think that this is a bourbon that demands respect, and what I mean from that is my glass that I've been sitting here twirling, sipping, moving. Putting it up against JC's glass that has been sitting just with itself, not being touched, not being messed with. I would take JC's glass over my glass.
Sure.
And that's because I feel like JC's glass, the untouched, the one that hasn't been swirled, is giving me the true profile and the flavor of the bourbon.
Mm-hmm.
And if I'm gonna give this a true rating, I think for me, I'm gonna sit at in the middle of both of you. Actually, did you give it a 1.5?
I give it a 1.5.
I'm gonna go 1.5 too. Because again, Oscar, to your point, when I think of bourbon, I think of grit, I think of flavor, I think of experience, and I think this at the price point, no matter who you gave it to, no matter who you were drinking it with, where you were, this would hold up.
This is grit with some elegance.
Yeah, mm-hmm. Yeah, and I think that this does deserve that top,
yeah,
that top three, that top five tier space. Yeah. For sure. Yeah, it's a little bit more expensive. And I'll be honest with you, I will agree, I've had Old Soul now 3 times, one on the podcast, 2 times after. Old Soul opens up very sweet.
Yes.
Like, and I am a sweeter palate, but almost too sweet. And so that's where this wins out.
Yeah.
Because if you're not touching it, if you're just letting
you the want bourbon a be little a bourbon, bit of that burn to
yeah,
stay.
Yeah. And the E.H. Taylor, this is, thank you.
They did something damn good and they kept it.
Yeah, exactly. Mm-hmm. And I think that like this should be a standard for bourbon.
Agreed.
Like if you are drinking bourbon, you should sip this and go,
E.H. Taylor,
this is what I expect mm-hmm. from the bourbon experience. Absolutely. Yeah.
If you're doing a now, good bourbon
like now what we gotta
tasting,
do?
This better be in the mix.
Now what we got to do? A blind taste. E.H. Taylor, Old Soul, Midsummer Night's Dream.
Dexter.
No, we can't, though, because...
Dexter. You got to throw Dexter in there.
The problem is... Well, but you know what, though? We keep forgetting the Elijah Craig Private Barrel
You're
Select.
Right. Yes. That was early on. You're
is
right,
the
though.
One that
right.
keep... We mm-hmm. were all at 1.5.
Yep.
I have...
At that one.
You know what? You called me out, because that's one of my favorite labels.
And the problem with Midsummer Night's Dram is it's so distinctive.
Yeah.
We would know immediately.
I will call that out quick.
What that one is.
Yeah.
Because it's just got such a unique. Well, then,
so we need something that's a little bit more not so off kilter.
Yeah.
Like in the same mash
I would
bill.
You know what I would do? I would do a... Because I think the Midsummer Night's Dram, Casa Nobles, the movie one that we tasted...
Yeah.
You know what I mean? Like though, that's a separate. Yeah. Mm-hmm. Like we almost have to do categories of
like with bourbon. This one, you have to go with maybe some Elijah.
Yeah. Yeah.
Stag.
Yeah, mm-hmm. I think E.H. Taylor, Stag, Elijah Craig, Private Barrel Select, mm-hmm. Old Soul. That would be a good blind.
That'd be a good one.
Yeah.
That'd be a good blind.
Because I've had
Stag and I do like it a lot. But it's very hard to get a hold of.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
It's another $100 up on this price point.
Yeah.
So you're paying like $230.
Yep.
So it's tough, right? Mm-hmm. And is it worth an extra $100 off of this?
Let's find out.
Yeah.
I don't know.
Let's do it.
Let's
do it. You guys let us know
in the next few months, and let's make it happen.
Well, you guys let us know what do you want to see. We're coming up on episode 100, and like I said, we're working on doing a giveaway. We want to partner with you guys. We'll probably give away a couple bottles plus a couple of these glass sets.
These glasses are awesome.
Yeah, because you got it. If you're following us, you got to have
Charlie,
these glasses.
Hello, fine.
Thank you. Yeah, that.
Yeah, I will be buying these for my own personal residence.
This is wild. Absolutely wild.
I'm throwing my logo on these things.
I think at the end of the day, phenomenal episode.
That's
with a
genius
bourbon.
Fucking idea.
It is.
As a closing gift?
I hope you guys can see Jameson's
face. That's what I do with the Yetis.
I hope you can see Jameson's face right now.
That's a closing
light bulb moment just went off.
But
with that being said, guys, you can reach out to us at any time. All of us individually at our own personal socials. Oscar?
OscarTheRealtor.com. OscarTheRealtor.co.
Jamo?
The Colorado Real Estate Guy or Jameson Amoros. Either one you can find me.
Oscar
Facebook,
Barra.
Instagram, TikTok.
Yep. You can find me at Charlie Sardelli, or if you're looking for any kind of video production, any kind of social media, anything like that, at Beat the Jeans Productions. You want to put on a podcast like this? Reach out to me. I'm more than happy to help. But if you want to reach all of us together, schedule an event, talk about sipping on some bourbon or getting
come
some
on
bottles,
the podcast.
Or, definitely. Come on, be a guest. We're always looking to add some more value.
Be our guest. Take our service.
You can reach out to us at any time, 24/7 at RESOTR@themilehighperspective.com or text phone call.
720-584-3361.
And
unless you're in Douglas County, I'm known as Nolan's dad.
I love it. I love it. Well, on that note, thank you guys so much for joining us on another episode. We will catch you on the next one.
Kampai.
Cheers. Cheers.
Cheers.
Salut.
Thank you for tuning in to this week's episode of Real Estate Served on the Rocks. You can find us on Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and really anywhere that you listen to podcasts. And to see the video version, subscribe to our YouTube channel at Living in Colorado, The Mile High Perspective.